This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. A UN commission on Syria says a pending battle between pro-government forces and thousands of jihadists in Idlib province should not result in taking 3 million civilians hostage. Paulo Sergio Pinheiro, chair of the Independent Commission of Inquiry on Syria, said past battles for Aleppo, Homs, and Daraa resulted in a high cost for civilians.
These operations displaced over 1 million Syrian men, women, children in under 6 months. Hundreds of thousands of civilians fled clashes in Daraa, and tens of thousands fled through humanitarian corridors in eastern Ghouta to camps set up near Damascus. Tens of thousands of other civilians were forcibly displaced in consequence of evacuation agreements negotiated among warring parties.
Syrian forces backed by Russia have been massing fighters on the edge of the northwest province bordering Turkey to assault the last major rebel stronghold. This displaced man from Khan Shakun arrived in Basuta, controlled by the Free Syrian Army. He said people are worried the Syrian regime in Russia will not abide by the presence of a de-escalation zone. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said intermittent artillery fire continued hitting southern districts of Idlib and the adjacent province of Hama. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir signed a peace agreement with rebel factions in Addis Ababa Wednesday to end a 5-year civil war estimated to have killed 50,000 people and displaced millions. Host Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was on hand.
This indeed is a major milestone and a great stride towards building and lasting peace.
Rebel leaders led by Riek Machar signed after being given assurances a power-sharing arrangement would be honored. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has certified to Congress that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are working to reduce civilian casualties in Yemen. The 3-year conflict against the Houthi rebels has claimed more than 10,000 lives. Riyadh and its coalition partners have come under sharp criticism for carrying out what are called indiscriminate air attacks, resulting in large numbers of civilian casualties, including an incident August 9 that hit a bus, killing dozens, injuring children. The certification is requiring to allow the U.S. to continue offering logistical and intelligence support to the Saudi coalition. Hurricane Florence has weakened to a Category 3 storm, but is expected to dump historic levels of rain on the U.S. southeast beginning early Friday as it makes landfall. It's still packing nearly 200-kilometer-per-hour winds. President Donald Trump said federal assistance is ready for those affected.
We'll handle it. We're ready. We're able. We've got the finest people, I think, anywhere in the world. FEMA and first responders are out there. They're going to stand through the danger of this storm.
The hurricane expected to strike North Carolina first, where Roy Cooper is the state governor.
The time to prepare is almost over. This morning's forecast shows the storm is only hours away. Powerful winds will reach our beaches and sounds tomorrow morning. North Carolina, my message is clear. Disaster is at the doorstep and is coming in.
The storm forecast to bring a nearly 3-meter storm surge. It could dump up to 1 meter of rain, causing widespread flooding. High winds could result in widespread power outages. The U.S. has introduced a draft Security Council resolution to toughen punishment for misconduct by U.N. peacekeepers. Separate missions have faced allegations of abuse and failing to aid civilians caught up in violence, especially in Central African Republic and South Sudan. A new law criminalizing violence against women has gone into effect in Morocco, especially as it relates to harassment, aggression, sexual exploitation, and ill treatment, but critics contend it does not address forced marriage or domestic violence. California-based tech giant Apple Wednesday introduced its newest generation iPhone, the XS, boasting a nearly 15-centimeter screen. It's the latest in a line of smartphones. Phil Schiller is senior vice president of marketing.
iPhone 7 starts now at just $449, and there are models of iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. iPhone 8 at $599, models of 8 and 8 Plus. The brand new iPhone XR starting at $749, XS at $999, and XS Max at $1099.
In an attempt to diversify its product line, Apple also rolled out its Apple 4 watch with larger displays and a new health monitoring system. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi expels UN Human Rights Commission experts.
We said that the government of Burundi cannot cooperate with commission in court. Any mechanism related to human rights by force, we cannot accept.
Martin Nimiabandi is Burundi's human rights minister. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is being laid to rest today in his native Ghana. Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine has accused the government of paranoia. Meanwhile, the Ugandan government says it does not torture its own citizens.
On the alleged torture as a principle, Uganda is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture. In fact, it is the NRM government that ratified this charter.
Mosibuha Katende is Uganda's ambassador to the United States. And this year's second annual Dakar Music Festival is in its planning stages. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's government has banned members of the UN Commission of Inquiry from visiting the country. The country's foreign affairs minister declared members of the commission persona non grata and accused the team of releasing a report which the government says contained false information. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
In a letter written by the Burundi's Foreign Affairs Minister Ezekiel Nibigira, the country was disappointed with what it called a false and defamatory report that the Commission of Inquiry made public last week. The UN Commission of Inquiry Chairman Dudu Diene, with other two commission members, won't be able to visit Burundi as part of their mandate to report on the allegations of human rights violation in the country since 2015. Martin Nivyabandi is the Burundi Human Rights Minister.
We said that the government of Burundi cannot cooperate with commission imposed by human rights, by European Union. Burundi, we are ready to cooperate with all kinds of organizations, but we are not imposed by force. Any mechanism related to human rights by force, we cannot accept.
The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi released a report last week indicating gross human rights violation by government officials, including the ruling party youth wing Imbonerakure. The damning report indicates serious human rights violations, with some which constitutes crimes against humanity. Agathon Rwasa, an opposition leader and deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament, warned that banning the commission to enter the country will worsen Burundi relations with the international community.
The facts are there. People are terrorized. People are forced to do this or to do that. People are ill-treated. That's common. What is important is even if people can just think that refuting all the reports is the good way, but what would be better? People can just sit and discuss the issues and try to improve the situation.
Burundi Human Rights Minister Martin Nivyabandi said that the Commission of Inquiry was formed without considering rules of procedures of the Human Rights Council.
Because you are a member of Human Rights Council and we know how those mechanisms operate, that's why we said that we cannot cooperate. And also, it was very obvious this Commission of Inquiry had some recommendations from the European Union. The conclusion was before known by the government of Burundi.
This is not the first time Burundi declares a UN official persona non grata. Several officials since 2014 were declared non grata by the government after failed UN-mediated dialogue to put an end to the political crisis that rocked the country since 2015. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Ugandan opposition member of parliament Robert Chagulayi, popularly known as Bobby Wine, has accused the Ugandan government of paranoia to the point that he says the government doesn't want Ugandan young people to communicate with one another through social media. Bobby Wine, who is in the United States for specialized medical treatment, was the guest on VOA's Straight Talk Africa television program on Wednesday, along with Uganda's ambassador to the United States. But many Ugandans did not get to see the interview because of a power outage. The Ugandan Umeme Power Company put out a statement saying the power outage was nationwide and that it was working to restore supply. But Bobby Wine said the outage was all a plan by the Ugandan government to stifle anyone trying to give hope to the people of Uganda. He stopped by our Washington studio to tell me he and the people of Uganda are unstoppable. Honorable Bobby Wine,
yes,
welcome
sir.
To Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Africa.
Thank you. So nice to see you again.
The
last time I spoke to you, you were not that well. How are you doing?
I'm better. I get better every day.
Every day?
Yeah.
You sound better.
I have no option but to get better. I got work to do.
You were on Straight Talk Africa Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you were on that program, there was news from Uganda that there was a power outage.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, that's paranoia. The regime in Kampala is so paranoid that they're even scared when we communicate, especially as young people. They don't want Ugandans to communicate with each other. They don't want to see anybody giving hope to the people of Uganda. So they'll do anything.
So you think it's the Ugandan government that is behind that?
Well, I think the people who are responsible to light up the city deliberately blacked out the city.
Someone just sent me a statement from this Umeme Power Company, is that correct?
Yes.
It says here, dear esteemed customers, we have been advised by our supplier, Uganda Electricity Transmission Company Limited, of a nationwide outage. The UETCL team are working to restore supply. We regret any inconvenience caused. What do you make of this?
Well, I got news for them. We are living in a generation which is faster than they think. Before long, everybody in Uganda will watch that program because that program was streaming live. And indeed, allow me to make an advert right here. Dear Ugandans, Voice of America was streaming live on Facebook. So you can go on Facebook and watch the entire program. We are unstoppable. They cannot stop us. We are going to communicate and we're going to listen to each other.
Talking about unstoppable, do you still plan to return to Uganda?
I am going back to Uganda next
week.
Even
what's happening now?
Man, that's my home, yo. That's where I come from. That's where I'm born. And that's where I'm going to be buried. So make no mistake, I am going back to Uganda.
I know you are here for medical reasons. How do you think this trip is going in terms of your effort to bring to light your own plight and the situation in Uganda? How is it going?
Well, I've been very humbled with the opportunity to highlight the plight of my people. This is not just about me. You know, I was tortured, I was brutalized, but I know that Ugandans have been tortured over many years. Even with the day we were arrested, it was 33 of us that were beaten and tortured. And indeed, a few other colleagues were even more brutalized than I am. So the little I can do is to use my opportunity to raise the voice of the millions and billions of people in Uganda that are being oppressed.
The government does not believe that you were tortured or you were badly wounded, as you claim, because the government spokesman said, or the Minister of Interior was saying, that if you were tortured and badly mishandled, then how did you fly 13 hours from Uganda to the United States?
I guess the government still doesn't believe that my driver was also killed. That is the government.
Bobby Wine, so nice to have you on Daybreak.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much again.
Cheers.
And good luck. That's Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chakulai, popularly known as Bobby Wine. He was speaking with me here in our Washington studio. Uganda's ambassador to the United States, Mole Sibuha Katende, says the Ugandan government does not torture its own citizens. Ambassador Katende says Uganda is signatory to UN Convention Against Torture.
There has been a lot of information circulating on the media that there is a lot of crisis in Uganda. I want to assure all our viewers that there is no crisis in Uganda. Secondly, Uganda remains committed to the tenets of democracy, rule of law, and respect for human rights. On the issues which the Honorable here has alluded to, they are before the court, and the court will pronounce itself on them. And here we are guided by the rule of sub judice. But Let me say this. Uganda does not condone torture. And whatever issues the Honorable has and any others of his association, any issues they have will be pronounced on in court. Uganda has functioning institutions, and I'm sure the Honorable will agree with me that he's benefiting from some of them. He's now here on bail, he will continue to observe the due process. On the alleged torture, as a principle, Uganda is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Torture. In fact, it is the NRM government that ratified this charter in 1987. Thirdly, we have a Uganda Human Rights Commission. The chairman of the Human Rights Commission visited the Honorable, and he will produce a report. The commission is an independent institution. It is not influenced by government, and we will look forward to its report.
Unfortunately, Mr. Ambassador, time happens not to be our best ally.
Yes, yes. But otherwise, I was going to tell you that UPDF Board of Survey has instituted an inquiry. The Uganda Police Force has also instituted an inquiry. Any security forces that might have committed commissions will face the consequences.
Uganda's ambassador to the United States, Mall Sebuha Katende, he appeared Wednesday on VOA Straight Talk Africa with host Shaka Sally. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Thursday, September 13th. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. The leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, Patrick Oboa Amuriat, has called on the international community to review its military cooperation with the National Army, known as the Uganda People's Defense Forces, the UPDF. The call followed what Amuriat said was torture and violence by state security agencies of opponents of President Yoweri Museveni. Amuriat spoke with viewers Peter Clotty.
European countries and America may really need to interrogate very, very closely what is happening in the UPDF. Some of the atrocities that have been committed, including the killing of tens of people, hundreds of people actually, in Kasese in Western Uganda sometime last year. These have got to be investigated, and the UPDF is found to be wanting, as we believe in the FDC that they will be found to be wanting, then there must be a review in the cooperation between those countries and Uganda in terms of military cooperation.
But some supporters of the NRM are saying that if the international community pulls out support or cooperation for the UPDF, the entire Ugandan society will suffer because of forces, including the Lord Resistance Army. They will come and destabilize the country. So your call is misplaced, and it will be to the detriment of the country Uganda.
What the military and the government of Mr. Museveni should do is to prove that that is what the UPDF actually stands for. If the guns are being turned against the citizens that they are supposed to protect, then they fail in their duty to ensure that the citizens of the country are protected. So really, this is a burden that is not on the citizens of the country. The burden is on Mr. Museveni and the UPDF, that is the National Army, to prove that, you know, they are carrying their duty in consonance with the instruction of the Constitution, and that they have not caused harm or pain on the people of Uganda. There is evidence to show that the people of Uganda have suffered under the hands of the army. And so really, if they can refute that evidence that is available, then maybe that kind of cooperation can continue. But really, at the moment, this is an indictment on the security forces, and it's up on them to be able to prove their case.
Patrick Oboy Amurayat is the leader of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Kampala. Ghanaians and the world are saying a final goodbye today, Thursday, to former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, who died August 18 in a Swiss hospital at the age of 80. Tribal chiefs, world leaders, and other mourners filed past Annan's coffin, draped in Ghana's flag at the International Conference Center in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Ghana's Information Minister Kofi Opong Nkrumah says Annan's death has been a moment of introspection for the country.
It's a very somber mood in Ghana, so it has been for the last about 4 days since his remains arrived in Ghana, and we started the process of mourning and preparing to finally inter him. Ordinary Ghanaians have had an opportunity to come pay their respects. Dignitaries and traditional leaders have done so. This morning, the global community with heads of state from many parts of the world and United Nations officials also joined us to pay their last respects before his final interment. It's been a moment of introspection also for us as a country.
You talk about the global community. I'm sure there's many dignitaries from around the world. Who are some of the people you know, dignitaries that are there for this funeral?
The United Nations Secretary General himself is here. He's a deterrent. The Emir of Qatar is here. So other, I say, royalty from other parts of the world who have all come to the president of Cote d'Ivoire, Namibia, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Ethiopia, Niger, former head of state of Germany, and several other parts.
What can you tell us about the official program itself for today? What does it look like?
Mr. Annan is a Christian of Anglican heritage, and so we'll have an Anglican funeral service laced with contemporary art performance, both from Ghana and other parts of the world. I will have an opportunity to hear from his wife and children also as they share their tributes. The president of Ghana and the United Nations as well will also be paying their tribute.
Many have spoken about the former UN Secretary General since his passing. Now, as a Ghanaian, how do you think he should be remembered?
I think he should be remembered as a man who depicted the excellence of the Ghanaian on the global stage. The man who depicted the warmth and humility of the African on the world stage. And a man who also depicted depth and a desire to unite all persons in pursuit of the common human goal. These are values that we have been talking about in Ghana in the days gone past, and we are hopeful that as we remind ourselves of his life and his values, a lot more young people will emulate his example.
Mr. Nkrumah, thank you very much again. So nice to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Kofi Opong Nkrumah is Ghana's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Accra. This year's second annual Dakar Music Festival is in its planning stages, as organizers hope to double the attendance from last year's audience of around 4,000. One of the organizers, Sophian Araya, tells Ricky Schreier the theme for the November event is when electronic music meets African music.
What will be different is that, of course, we're going to organize better because we learned from the first year what was good and what was not good in the organization in terms of promotion, in terms of communication, in terms of artists also. And what we want to do this year is to be more connect with Dakar people, because last year we was doing too much communication like internationally, to bring people from outside the country, but also we want like people from Dakar come to the festival. It's our first thing we want.
And how many people came last year? And how many are you hoping to attend this year?
Last year we did like around 4,000 people in all the events we did, because we organized 17 events during the 10 days. So we was pretty happy, and I hope we're going to do the double this year.
As far as the lineup goes, what kind of musicians are you bringing in this year?
The theme of the festival is when electronic music meets African music, like African vibe. So it will be a mix of electronic music. We have DJ coming from France, from Russia, from Italy, Spain. Last year we had also one American artist. And also we have like artists from Senegal, like Djidja Wadji, Souleymane Faye, and some newcomers also.
Besides music, will there be any other artistic events that are not necessarily music events, but let's say, you know, visual art?
Yeah. Of course, we do like art exhibition also. Last year, we had the chance to have one art installation in the June near the Pink Lake. So it was made by a girl called Bonhomme Lass. It was a three meters art installation with metal and with a man in the middle that can move when people play with it.
Why did you think this was an event you wanted to do that might add to the discourse?
The thing is, like, all the landscape are amazing. So we wanted to show to the people. Like, for example, there's a lot of people from Dakar. They didn't know the dune near the Pink Lake. So it's a good way to show the country to the local people also. And, of course, to the international people that come, because I think more people should come to Dakar because it's really amazing.
That was Sopian Ara, one of the organizers of the Dakar Music Festival. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Spain. New data show a significant increase in the incidence of global cancer. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, part of the World Health Organization, estimates a rise in new cases of cancer to more than 18 million, including 9.6 million deaths this year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of the latest report on 36 types of cancer in 185 countries.
The report finds 1 in 5 men and 1 in 6 women worldwide develop cancer during their lifetime, and more men than women die of the disease. It says nearly half of the new cases and more than half of cancer deaths this year occurred in Asia, in part because nearly 60% of the global population lives there. The data show lung and breast cancers, followed by colorectal, prostate, and stomach cancers, are responsible for the highest numbers of new cases globally. It cites lung cancer as the leading cause of death, accounting for 1.8 million deaths in 2018. International Agency for Research on Cancer head of surveillance, Freddie Bray, says by 2040, the number of new cancer cases is projected to rise to 29.3 million and the number of deaths to 16.3 million.
The biggest increases in the cancer burden, a doubling of the cancer burden to 2040, is going to occur in countries at the lowest levels of socio-economic development, so many in sub-Saharan Africa, some in South America, some in Southern Asia. But they're the countries faced with this increasing cancer burden that are presently ill-equipped to deal with this pending increase.
Etienne Krug is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Noncommunicable Diseases. He says many of the main cancer risks killing people can be prevented by cutting down on tobacco and alcohol consumption, exercising more, and eating better. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa News. Burundi's government has banned members of the UN Commission of Inquiry from visiting the country. The country's foreign affairs minister declared members of the commission persona non grata and accused them of releasing a report which the government said contained false information. That's it for this Thursday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti saying have a good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.